All right.
Boom.
What is this? Number 20?
I don't know. Sound guy?
I think it's 18.
No.
No way, no, because we became legal when we had Kevin on.
Oh, yeah, ooh, you're right.
And then I
so
think
this is 20.
I think 19.
Yeah, how do we not know this? I wish we were more.
Oh,
organized.
This is 19.
This is 19.
We'll get 20 next week.
Boom.
Okay.
Boom.
had to close the Dustin Hoffman IMDb over here so I could check out the Anchor app.
You know, Lyle love it. It happens.
Well, you know.
Well, you know. I just want to let you guys know that we actually have a very fun, action-packed episode today.
Yes,
in
we
our
do.
Semi-permanent home.
Yes.
We are once again.
Where are we, big guy?
Broadcasting live from Broken Strings Brewing in downtown Orlando. Charles, great guy, lets us come in here and do our thing.
Open the doors.
Open the doors early for us. I think a lot of good things are going to come out of this. Obviously, we'll still be trying to visit our friends over at 1845.
Of course. And, try to make that a once a month thing.
You know, maybe a few other places that we can squeeze into. But as of right now, we are happy right here at Broken Strings Brewing.
What about that one off of Cimarron that we were going to go to? You remember that one?
No. Oh. Are you talking about Castle Church?
That one.
I was
that's
just
right.
There. Funny yeah. enough, they're doing their one-year anniversary.
Praise Jesus.
And they have their new brewmaster, or their new brewer, Kent, is kind of a legend, in my opinion, in
where'd
the
they
brewing
find Kent?
Community. So Kent came from Crooked Can.
Say that five times fast.
Boom. Kent was at Crooked Can for a while, then he left to do his own thing and started Orange County Brewing.
Oh, okay.
And when they decided that they didn't want to stay in that situation anymore, he did Brew Theory. And it wasn't really flowing the way he wanted. So now he is at Castle Church Brewing. Nice. Loving life. I just did a brewery tour for the first time in a while. And he was there and we got to chatting. And
excellent.
He is becoming like a local legend in the in the Orlando brewing scene.
Okay.
Because he's got to work with, obviously, I think the biggest brewery in Orlando is Crooked Can.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're becoming kind of like our Cigar City-ish, if you mm-hmm. will. They're in every supermarket. They're in every restaurant. They're kind of everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to have the High Lie IPA on tap at my
That's for Cigar City. You're looking at High Stepper or McSwagger
oh,
or
I'm
McStagger.
Sorry. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
It's okay. You'll get there.
Yep.
Or Cloud Chasers everywhere.
Yeah,
boom. You
that
know where
good.
I was going.
Yep.
So, yeah, he's been responsible for some really good beer. He's also a very good friend of Charles. You know the cool thing about these breweries, especially in Orlando, getting to work with Charles
mm-hmm.
Here at the brewery and like being able to do our podcast here. And the guy is like so deep into not just his own brewery, but everyone else's.
Yeah.
Helping people out and really making sure that not just his brewery grows, but the entire landscape of Orlando brewing grows with him.
Well, I think it kind of comes with an idea that if this brewing scene of Orlando doesn't flourish, any one of the individual breweries is going to fail.
Correct.
And it's one thing that you got to realize, and you got to know that as much as there is a competition, there is a large enough retail space
correct.
For everybody to find their niche and to do exactly what they do here. The milkshake IPAs, these delicious sours that they have,
yep.
the barrel-aged stuff that they're working on in the back.
Yeah.
But then it's completely different to somewhere like Dead Lizard over there.
Who's doing? Yeah, they're doing. It's
they
the
got
cool thing about this
more
is,
skunky porters.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
When you're brewing beer, and there's a brewery down the street, you don't think I got to compete with this guy. You think
nah.
I can't wait to collab with this guy and create another beer that we could both profit
yeah.
off of, and it'll taste great.
Because if those two beer brewers were to get in there and to mix some kind of collaboration of their two most popular beers, the way that the beer scene is going, it would be a huge hit.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And that's the type of stuff that we need to see.
100%.
But you were actually talking to me about brewing beer in some otherworldly capacity.
We're going to get there.
Okay.
Right after we talk about the namesake.
Ah.
This podcast.
Yes.
Started with an idea. Mm-hmm. And that idea pretty much was incubated at one event.
Yep. One event solely.
The Jameson's Bartender's Ball.
Yes.
It is.
Ooh,
oh, yeah. Annual event held all over the country in different cities.
Yeah.
Thrown by Jameson for bartenders. And
it is
free. Yeah. And why is it free?
It's a service industry appreciation event.
It is a thank you to all the bartenders
who sling Jameson year round.
Throw Jameson out there.
Yep.
Incorporate it into their shots and
I'll tell you,
drinks.
I love the idea of it because not only do all of us that get to attend mm-hmm. such an exclusive event, since it's so exclusive, it's December 9th, 8 to 11 p.m., Tin Roof. It is an RSVP. You have to get a ticket from one of your liquor reps, but it is a chance for a lot of bartenders, dress up a little bit nicer. It's kind of more black tie formal. They usually have it catered. Last year it was catered by Four Rivers.
This year, I think it's because that's Tin Roof. They're going to do their own.
Yeah.
Thing, but.
Well, but the part I got sidetracked a little bit about is everything is complimentary.
100%.
You don't pay for the ticket. You don't pay for the drinks. You don't pay for the food. It is all complimentary. And the thing that I love most about that is this year, my buddy Tony is bartending it because he works at Tin Roof.
So he's got the inside.
Yeah. But I guarantee that these bartenders make $1,200 tonight.
A minimum.
Or that night.
It's coming up on Monday. So yeah, it's going to be a big one. Honestly.
Because I know when I go up there and I ask for 3 Jameson Blacks on the rocks and then a Cigar City High Lie, and they just hand them to me and I'm like, what? Like, here's a 20.
Honestly, here's a 20. Like, it's complimentary. But absolutely. The first time you order a drink, it just blows
your mind. You have your wallet in your hand and you're like, oh. Oh, it's not that kind of night.
To be honest, it's a complimentary night, but you're still going to spend $100.
Exactly.
Minimum, probably.
And I am totally fine to do that.
Because the thing is like, yeah, it's a big thank you to us. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes our ego kicks in and like, yeah, we fucking deserve it. Yeah. And we really do. You know, like,
bartenders
I'm not
slog
saying,
through a lot
we're
of
not
shit.
Saving lives.
Yeah.
We're not fucking
well, and that's the thing. Neither one
doing
of us,
any of that. But
neither one of us will deny that we make more than some of our friends that have degrees.
Right. But and it's not even that. Just like you look at other jobs that are blue collar. Bartending is mm-hmm. a blue collar job.
Absolutely.
So, you know, like firefighters, police officers. We're not on that level at all. No.
No.
But we do mm-hmm. we do put up with a lot of bullshit.
But I've still resuscitated a relationship.
You have? Speaking of that, you look great today.
Thanks, big guy.
Dressed to the nines.
Oh,
shout out to Chelsea.
Wonderful night.
Yeah, the sisterhood.
Hey.
Anyway. but yeah, it's like bartenders, we have a pretty easy job. We just talk to people. Bartenders, servers. You know, all we do.
We glaze over a lot of the shitty parts of it.
We have the best part of the service industry.
Yeah.
Because we talk to people for a living. Occasionally we have to bring them drinks and food.
Yeah.
And they give us money for it.
That's it.
And it's cash.
It's back of house, management, servers,
bartenders. In some cases, the server bartender role are swapped.
No offense.
Oh, I'm none taken. I'd love to be behind the bar.
We'll get you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We'll get you there.
No, I'm lying. I don't want to do that.
You like
then you have to constantly talk to people.
But honestly,
you enjoy that.
I do.
Now
you enjoy you're facing them.
See, and this is
like,
what makes us.
You can't go duck away. You can't go to the side station.
You can.
You have to fucking.
So well, see,
oddly enough, for me, I work on a suicide bar,
right?
Which means 360 degrees,
right?
Yeah,
there is no hiding from anybody.
That's the
you
that's the same
sneeze,
thing at Tango.
You got to take a drink. You want to eat something? No, Tango is a 190 degree bar at most.
Oh, yeah, because they have a wall. But it's not like you can hide behind that wall.
No, but I'm just saying, though, you got the big liquor island kind of in the middle that you can hide on the other side of.
No, you cannot
hide
anywhere behind
that bar. There's chairs there and servers. So what's worse, talking to your guests or having to deal with the servers?
Well, I just mean
no offense.
In the sense of a suicide bar where you can turn and face nobody. I can't do that at my bar. No, whichever direction I turn,
I mean,
there's
a
guest.
So I understand
that. But, like, you're going to turn around and stare at a wall, though.
Yeah, but then again, everybody guests can see your profile. It's not like they can't see what you're doing.
Yeah.
This isn't peekaboo, Drew.
I mean, with some bar guests, it feels like it is.
No, the thing is, and what I like about working here at Broken Strings is it's really easy to get guests to talk to one another.
Yeah.
So if you can get a conversation going that incorporates a couple of different parties.
Yep.
And then
you're like,
you're doing my job
for me.
Well, it's not even that they're doing their job. A, you're elevating their experience, making your job easier, as well as increasing your tip.
Yeah.
So while they're chatting, you could turn around real quick and take care of some other people.
Yeah.
Or do some other things. Sorry, I just hit the microphone.
No, you're good.
And that's what makes us masters of our environment back there.
You really got to just, the thing is all you're doing is talking to people, which for some people that hate talking to people, that's fine. But at the same time, those people are going to give you money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you just go into the mindset of that motivation, it can be the most easy job in the world. It's seldom ever is the most easy job in the world, but it can be. Or you can enjoy it enough to where you don't feel like you're at work.
Or once you care enough and you've put enough thought and skill and practice into it, you can make it one of the easiest jobs in the world. Because look at some of the bartenders that we know that have made their namesake of being behind the same bar for 5 years.
Or longer.
They have the same shifts every week. They show up.
We just talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And it's a wonderful topic because it's tough. Because it's so easy to get to that point. But I'll be the first one to say, there is nothing past it.
But okay,
it is a dead end road.
That's the thing, though. Once you become a CEO, there's nothing past it.
But let's
and I'm not saying they're not comparable. But at some point, you have to hit a plateau. And so there's a girl I know. Her name is Jill. Jill Jaca. She is awesome, hilarious.
But yeah,
no, definitely not made up. especially if you tell her, if you talk to her about hockey, you're gonna feel so inadequate because she knows more about hockey than most people I know.
She'll shoulder check you.
She will. And she's a tiny little thing. She works over at BJ's Brewhouse in Lake Buena Vista. She's a bartender there. And I was talking to her because we opened that restaurant together. I'm like, you're still here. She's like, honestly, they don't fuck with me. If you don't fuck with my schedule and mm-hmm. you just don't fuck with me in general,
yeah,
I'll be the best employee you have.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a mindset that our generation is still trying to, and some of us have settled into it and some of us haven't, of what's our next move? How are we going to make a living for the rest of our lives? But there's nothing wrong with being a career server or bartender in this city.
No.
Now, you can't do that in Poughkeepsie or Temecula, somewhere like that, you know?
Yeah.
But in Orlando, where we get 78 million tourists a year and we're on pace to go by over 100 million in the next 5 years, in 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's honestly...
I guess I just take it to the extreme of, what are you going to do when you're 60?
Bartend. I know 60-year-old bartenders are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to England?
Mm-hmm.
The owners bartend in England. They got some young guys, but the owners bartend on the nights where money's made.
Yeah.
It's a... Like, what are you going to... We've spent so much time memorizing cocktails and flavor profiles and things of that nature and flavor pairings with food. Why let that go to waste by getting another job where we'll make the same money? Working more hours.
Yeah. I can certainly understand that.
I know bartenders in Orlando who make upwards of $110,000 a year.
Yeah.
And they're in their 40s. And they've been at these restaurants and worked their way up. And you pretty much can only work there if someone dies.
Yeah.
Like, it's a great job. And you know exactly what's expected of you every day. Your managers have respect for you because you've been in these situations for a long time. Most of the time. That's not always the case.
Yeah.
But most of the time. Because honestly, there's a lot of restaurants where the manager turnover is higher than the bartender turnover. Mm-hmm. Or server turnover.
Yeah, because the bartenders know... Well, I think you'll always find that. The bartender turnover is always less than server turnover because bartenders, you got to have at least a good base amount of experience.
Well...
Things like that.
I'm just saying, like, there's servers also. And we're not going to make this exclusively a bartender thing. Yeah. Because there are places, like, you know, at Cafe 22 Tango, there's servers that have been there for forever.
Oh, yeah.
And how many GMs have you seen?
Oh, I've been there for, like...
there. Jeez.
2 years now. And 2 years? Easily, like, six, I
think. Yeah. See, I was there for...
5 or 6.
11 months, and I saw 3.
So at that point, you got the inmates running the asylum.
Yeah.
It's genius.
One flew over the cuckoo's nest.
And that is why we deserve a night, an exclusive night to ourselves. Just one. We're not asking for much. And it's not even a whole night. It's 4 hours of free drinks. And it's exclusive. So when you say that, it makes you feel better. Speaking of exclusive.
Yeah.
You had a really interesting article you showed me today about a Michelin star chef who lost all his stars.
Yes.
Talk to me about it.
It's a very interesting thing to say that a Michelin star restaurant has... lost its stars. It actually in this case does not mean that the restaurant got any worse. Their standards did not go down. But the one that we're actually talking about is a Jiro Ono.
Yes, which
sushi
is,
restaurant.
You were saying it's a Netflix documentary as well.
Yeah,
right?
There was a Netflix documentary in 2011 called Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Yeah, I've seen that. I go past that all the time.
And now, for those people that don't quite know, Michelin stars work in 1, 2, and 3 stars.
Right.
3 is the most. He was a 3-star Michelin chef.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, the reason they lost their stars is because the Michelin stars, or Michelin-starred restaurants, have to take reservations from the general public. And apparently, he does not accept reservations from the general public, which makes it out of their scope of review.
So he's too good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say Yelp reviews.
Do you know where Michelin came from? The Michelin star thing?
No.
So have you ever seen this show Top Chef?
Yes.
I do know. They showed one, and they were explaining how you get a Michelin star, and it was pretty much a roadmap.
No, that's the thing.
Michelin tires would sell you a roadmap, yeah, and they're worldwide.
The Michelin stars got started from the tire company.
Correct.
As a roadmap of the best places to stop and eat.
Exactly.
And then it became that they made their 3-star ranks so exclusive,
mm-hmm,
that chefs were like, no, like I need to give everything I have and make the ultimate dining experience.
Especially if you're going to put me on your map or,
exactly,
your book or your travel book, or whatever.
If this is a really national company that rents cars and everything like that, and they hand every customer a map that says, this is one of the best restaurants in the state.
Correct.
You realize how exclusive that is.
And it's like, we live in an age where we don't use maps anymore. And there's still the highest grade you can get is a tire company star.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Pretty strange, yeah.
It is a little different, isn't it?
Yeah.
I actually was at the home of Michelin Tires, which is Greenville, South Carolina, where they have their home base for Thanksgiving, was where my mom lives. And there's a lot of really good restaurants and breweries there. Have you had the Edmund's Oast, which is not in Greenville, but it's in South Carolina?
No.
They got the best fucking tap handle in the world, but they got a blonde ale or blonde lager. I had it over at Hidden Springs, which is another great little stop. Anyone in Orlando should make. It's right near you guys. But their blonde lager changed my life. I was like, man, I need to make better decisions after drinking this. It's really good.
Nice.
But yeah, Michelin, it's weird that we use a tire company to scope what is the best restaurant in the world.
Yeah, so that is strange.
Just pulling some things from this article, the omakase dining experience, which omakase means chef's choice.
Right.
$370.
Wow.
Per person, excluding tax.
And gratuity, I would imagine.
Yeah. And then, I did not know this. Take a guess at how many seats his restaurant has.
6?
Just a few more.
10?
Yep.
Really?
10 seats in this guy's restaurant.
You know, there's some places where, like, I'm not meant to go. Not because of the price, but because, like, honestly, I just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to... That seems a little pretentious.
Like, I can...
10 seats... Fucking after tip and everything, $500 per person, basically. Right.
Or you could do happy hour sushi at Dragonfly for like a month.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because I also had another life-changing experience where I ate something and thought I need to make better decisions. I can't remember the name of the roll, but there's a roll at Dragonfly Sushi.
Really?
And Marianne ordered it, and I had a bite of it, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm a shitty person. I need to do better.
Yeah. I've been making terrible life choices.
Has that ever happened to you where you drank or ate something that's so good you're just like, fuck, I need to do better?
Yeah.
Yeah, like this guy probably, whoever made this is the nicest dude ever, and I just need to craft my life after whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
I don't know about like that.
Maybe
but yeah.
not. But yeah, no, it's
he could have been an asshole.
It was an experience, to say the least. But yeah, I don't know. Those kind of places are, if it has a Michelin star, I guess I come from, like we were talking about, a blue-collar world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're paying for an experience, which I understand. But you also aren't paying for the personality of the people who are serving you, just the chef. And even his personality is curated for that moment.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. It feels like it might be just fake to me. Especially because you're paying $500 to still be hungry when you're done.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that restaurant and what they push out, and it looks incredible, and I guarantee you the experience is life-changing. But...
Yeah, probably leaves you hungry.
I'm going to leave there, and it's going to be a $550 thing, because I'm going to be a little drunk.
Yeah.
And I'll probably find a Checkers on the way home and spend $50 on fries.
I want to go there and spend $500 just to ask him for ranch. Like, hey, do you guys have ranch?
Can you douse this in ranch for me?
Hey, question. It's a little weird, but got any ketchup back there?
Ketchup, yeah. Maybe some ranch.
I feel like this Uni Sushi could use a little bit of ketchup.
What's the closest thing you guys have to a cheeseburger?
Listen, this fish doesn't look very cooked.
Ooh.
Is there a chance you can well done this bad boy for me?
Can you throw this back on the grill?
Done sushi. Ooh. Oh, man.
But I am excited to get to what you were talking about, because you haven't told me very much about it.
The beer in space?
Yeah.
So I would, my future sister-in-law, Beth,
how does that work?
Who's been
no
on
gravity?
The podcast talking about hair care products before. shout out to Charles fucking Norman for asking that question. The Budweiser company and NASA have got together to figure out how to, because you can't really brew or have beer in space.
Yeah.
Due to the carbonation and things, it kind of messes with the beer to where once you get into zero gravity, things start breaking apart and it just doesn't taste good. So there's a few companies that are getting together to try to figure out A, how to brew beer in space, and B, how to get beer that's already been brewed into space.
Interesting.
So obviously the leader, Budweiser, which is owned by InBev, which is the number one beer company in the world, I believe, have come together with NASA to figure this out, because they did find out that their astronauts were getting drunk.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious, because they wanted to, like, cut down on it. So they got together with Budweiser. Instead of sending them up there with the things to make liquor, they're doing it with beer.
Oh.
And they've created these specialty bottles that can handle zero gravity. And boom, we're going to have beer in space now. You can get drunk in space.
Can you imagine having the spins in space?
I was going to say, imagine stumbling back to your bunk. You would literally get 3 concussions because you're just bumping into shit.
Everything.
And if you puke,
and you drown.
Like, not really. If you puke, like if I were going to puke here, I'd puke on myself. If I were going to puke in space, it'd go on someone else. Yeah. Or it'd just hang out there until the morning. And it probably doesn't smell.
No, have you ever seen that stuff, man? Due to the surface tension of liquids in space, if you get water over your mouth, you can't get it off of there to breathe in air.
You can push it out, though.
I'm just saying, man, it's a big thing with astronauts drowning in space because they get a thin film of water.
I'm going to have to look. I mean, I believe you. I could see how it could happen. I just feel like it's easy to get away from the water.
Did you guys ever watch Wild Boys?
Oh, man, what a great show.
Yeah, you remember there was an episode where they did the zero gravity thing
and
with Steve-O, and
Steve-O was puking everywhere.
And, yeah, it just turns into little puke balls.
Yeah.
And floats through the air.
Steve-O did it in zero G.
Yeah, I understand
I guess because it's like a projectile thing, too. You're pushing it out. So gravity will not take hold, but it still allows you to push it out.
Okay, so what it is it's especially more important when you're in your spacesuit. Because you can't touch your face.
But if you're in the ISS, drunk AF off a couple of bugs. Well,
imagine puking in a spacesuit.
Dude, imagine farting in a spacesuit. You're fucked.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. Or pooping yourself.
Yep.
Well, Steve-O did that. Steve-O's done a lot of shit.
Yeah, he has.
But yeah, I think that's pretty interesting because they want to. Budweiser wants to make beer for the people who are going to colonize Mars with Elon Musk, which I think is pretty interesting if you ask me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to grow crops and do all this other shit and start a colony, you might as well be able to get drunk too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you hate the idea?
Nah, not at all.
Well, this brings us to another groundbreaking situation.
Yeah.
The first living human is being put on a coin in Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
Normally, we wouldn't really talk about these type of things, but it is Roger Federer.
Yeah.
Who is one of the greatest athletes in his sport. I would say one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yeah.
Or I would say at least one of the most dominant athletes of all time. And he's being put on a Swiss dollar.
Okay.
Pure silver. Beautiful looking dollar. And it's going to have Roger Federer's face right on it, which is pretty interesting because I think he's earned it. What are you reading over there that's keeping you so entangled?
No, I'm reading this thing on Roger Federer, man. He's 38 years old and he's going on a Swiss coin.
Yeah, I think beforehand he either had to be dead or at least 70.
Yeah.
In order to get on a coin. So.
Yeah, and those were the only stipulations.
Pretty much.
Put anyone on a coin.
Yeah, dead or 70.
Yeah, dead or 70.
Yeah. I will say, it doesn't look good, though.
It's a very... I mean, how great can you look on a coin?
I mean, you can look better than that.
I mean, the only pictures we have to go on these presidents that we have on coins is, like, from 200 years ago. So
yeah.
It's a little different. But
excellent.
Roger Federer on a coin... Like I was saying, I think he's earned it.
Yeah.
Being the most dominant athlete, not only in his sport, but of that country.
He's a 20-time Grand Slam champion.
He's still going.
Yeah.
He's not stopping. You look at Andy Roddick, who's from America, and he quit in his mid-30s, and he's on the seniors tour playing with Pete Sampras and the McEnroe brothers, you know? And he's younger than Roger Federer, or at least the same age, I think. But he is married to Brooklyn Decker, so he won.
Hey. Speaking of interesting marriages like that.
Lyle Lovett and Julia Roberts. I'm just kidding.
That one's an awful one, man.
What were you saying?
No, I was going to say, then you got a Danica Patrick and Aaron Rodgers.
So I purposely did not read this tweet. So you could read it and I can react in real time.
Oh, man.
There's a really fast boy.
Fast boy out there.
Fast boy out there. And he's turning into this parking lot. That was a lot of speed to stop so quickly.
Right? to wait on that FJ Cruiser to leave.
Yeah, look at him. Anyway, as he were. So Danica Patrick tweeted something to Aaron Rodgers on his or her birthday?
On Aaron Rodgers' birthday.
All right, do tell.
She ended up tweeting him. She was like, "Happy birthday to my best friend and favorite person in the world. You are the one I want to tell my best and worst days to first. I am so grateful the universe made you. The stardust started it all, but you have done nothing but make it better every year of your life. Thank you for being the loving, generous, thoughtful, patient, fun, funny, spontaneous, talented, smart, and uber-attractive man that I get to walk through life with. This journey we are on, it's a really, really good one. I love you."
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
That sounds like an attack on Christian values right there.
Yeah. Jeez. What the fuck?
That's an interesting way to put it. I mean, leading off with stardust and everything like that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
But.
Good for them.
Good for them. I still thought he was better off with Olivia Munn, but.
Hey.
Oh, he was with Olivia Munn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For forever. Oh, man. You should have seen those conversations that they were having.
Yeah. Certainly wasn't talking about stardust.
No, they're talking about something, though. Speaking of stardust, the karma.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about being nice to people. But there's a car company called Karma.
Yeah, at the... What was it? At the... Yeah. Oh, shoot. The LA Auto Show on December 3rd. They debuted the prototype of the Karma SC2. Yeah. And it is a phenomenal piece of machinery.
See, it's 100% electric, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I...
I'm sorry. I believe that a hypercar, by definition, has...
An engine.
Electric
a combustion. Yeah,
and
right,
combustion
right,
engine.
Right. So there is... The reason why this story is interesting to me, because there is a Karma in my neighborhood.
Okay.
That I see driving around all the time. It's powdered blue. And you don't see them very often.
No.
They are very weird-looking cars, to say the least. And hypercar is a new word that's come around recently.
Yeah, so much so that we were talking about it that Formula One's going to have a hypercar division.
Well, Formula One is already hypercar. That's where that technology came from. It's half hybrid. They use V8 or V10, one of the other hybrid engines in their cars, which anything over 500 horsepower is a supercar. So I think if you go any much more over that.
Yeah.
Anything over that, I'm sorry.
They usually start to get into the areas of 1,000.
Right.
Which, for this one, Karma says its pair of electric motors sends a combined 1,100 horsepower to all four wheels, and it can reach 0 to 60 in a blistering 1.9 seconds.
See, that's so... So, you watched the Grand Tour.
Yep.
And we, as you know, that the second season of the Grand Tour kind of got put on a halt because Richard Hammond, old Dick Ham,
yeah,
crashed.
Yep.
In an all-electric car. And that's pretty much just putting one connector onto another connector, and then boom, light speed.
Yeah.
That is the craziest thing in the world to me, that we have bypassed a combustion engine into something that is more dangerous. You'd figure we would have flown into something a little safer that won't blow you up. But not only will that shit, like, you're going 0 to 1,000.
Yeah.
But if you hit a wall, you got to worry about the batteries too.
But that's the thing. We always end up like, we figure out how to break the rules, and then we figure out how to be safe that way.
Well, we figure out how to break the rules, and then we kill a couple of people, and then we figure out how to make it safe.
Exactly.
Luckily, Richard Hammond lived.
Yeah.
And, but still, it makes me very optimistic. And by 2025, I think Formula One wants to be zero carbon emission, so you will see them going in this direction. Yeah, I mean, they're seeing the success of Formula E.
Yeah.
And it's gaining a following. It's just so weird. You get a lot of that because there's no sound.
Yeah.
It's just the sound of tires rolling. A lot of yawns like you're doing frequently. Did you get enough sleep?
No.
I'm worried.
You should be.
Freaking Chelsea.
Here we are.
Anyway. Exactly. Yeah, which is really funny. Which brings me to another point that I wanted to bring up on a previous podcast. I can't remember if I did or not. But the Formula One wants to put a Grand Prix in Miami.
Yes.
But it's currently being held back because some of the local government down there thinks that, A, it'll break your eardrums.
Yeah.
And carbon emissions are a big deal, too. Now, like I said, I'm pretty sure they're using like V8 engines, hybrid engines.
Usually, yeah, they're V8s or V10s.
They are loud, but they're not going over any sound ordinance because the race will be in the middle of the day. And it's in a parking lot of a football stadium.
Well, are we sure they won't go over sound ordinances? Because usually...
But they have Homestead, which is right up the street, and that's NASCAR. And there's no hybrid engines there. Or there might be, but they're not V8.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder which one's louder.
Oh, definitely NASCAR. Yeah. The engines are bigger. The exhaust is bigger.
Well, there you go.
Formula One's just a better engine, but that's a whole nother conversation for a different type of podcast. But anyway, yeah, so the electric car is going to take over pretty soon. And Formula E, like I said, the popularity of that is rising. Elon Musk, nowhere to be found.
Don't think that's true.
Not in that industry, is what I mean. He's not practicing in any of these races at all.
Oh, I mean, I don't think he's... I think those races are kind of like extracurricular activities for
car makers. He made a Cybertruck.
He did.
Yeah, and a flamethrower.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, he will always come out and say, like the whole dispute that he's going on with Porsche right now, saying that his hypercar is faster
than the 918?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in seeing that happen.
And he says it zero beats to 60, a 0 to maybe. 60 time.
Yeah, it could probably beat a 0 to 60 because once one end of the wire touches the other one, it's just pure speed.
Yes and no.
Whereas there's a more human element to the Porsche where you have to put, once you put it in launch control, there's like 18 things you got to do in 2 seconds.
No, he's still talking about the electric car.
Flatline speed. No, that's what I mean. The Porsche doesn't have an electric car that's that fast yet. Their 918 Spyder is their fastest car. It is a hypercar.
Hmm.
That was the one that was featured on the Grand Tour as well. That raced against the McLaren and the Ferrari, the Ferrari.
But no, I think it's different. I think it's different than the 918.
Oh. We might have to pull this up for a future podcast then.
Yeah. No, because I remember that there's been a huge dispute where Elon Musk got mad at the American version of Top Gear because they had the new, the Model 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the...
I don't think there is an American version of Top Gear anymore.
What, did it get canceled?
I'm pretty sure that they stopped doing it.
I don't know about all that.
Is your heart broken?
No, not at all.
No, the British version was always better, and then they got rid of the talent. But
yeah.
No, I think there might have been... I know that Tesla continues to get mad at these companies for review. He got mad at the Grand Tour because Jeremy Clarkson's review on it.
Yeah. Jeremy Clarkson angers a lot of people, though.
Yeah, you just got to take him for a grain of salt, you know.
Yeah.
He is what he is. Anyway, speaking of controversy and people going at it.
Yeah.
You and I.
Yeah.
We play each other this
That's
week.
It.
In fantasy football in the first round of the playoffs.
Are you, I should check right now. Just want to look at your lineup because there's a game tonight.
There is, and I don't think I have a single player in. But you do.
Do I?
I think you have Michael Gallup.
Oh, that's right.
Is he going to gallop you to the second?
I think he will.
How's your how's your fantasy team going?
I have not looked at it for weeks.
So you're probably...
I'm out of the playoffs.
Are you sure?
For both leagues, yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Why would you not consult?
So are you...
Because, like, it was like I've lost, like, the first two games.
And you're like, fuck it.
Fuck it. Give up.
Yep.
Oh, best $50 I ever threw away.
Yes.
We thrive on people like
we
that.
We do, but we want you to do better.
Yeah.
You're better than this.
Yeah.
You got you know all the best inside part info about fantasy football
right
is?
Here.
Which what? Your people do very well.
What is that? Oh.
Talk shit.
Oh, talk shit?
Yeah.
No, I was literally thinking the same thing. That's the only fun part of it for me.
I'm actually...
Like, the actual act of...
to win.
Shit talking?
Yeah, but, like, switching up, like, the lineups and stuff like that.
It's the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Just start whoever is starting and sit whoever isn't.
Yeah. Pretty much. It just feels like a chore. I'd rather just shit on my friends.
But you could do it while you're taking a shit.
So are you really going to sit Allen Robinson for me?
Who the hell am I going to take out?
Austin Eckler?
Have you seen his point spread? The only problem with Allen Robinson is he's got Mitchell Trubisky throwing to him.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's not like Austin Eckler plays behind Melvin Gordon.
It's not like Austin Eckler averages more points than Allen Robinson. Look at the point average while you're here. I want you to see it.
Because I want to help you with your lineup? No, thanks. I'll let
you're
you
not
look
helping
it
me. The lineup's already decided.
I'm just saying, and I will be very happy if Allen Robinson is on your bench.
Me too. It's going to be a very interesting week. So, like we said, we have the Bartender's Ball coming up. We
Monday.
Got this fantasy match.
Oh, yeah.
Which goes through to Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to probably be back here at Broken Strings on Thursday again.
Yeah.
Ready to do another one.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a special guest on next week.
That's we are right. trying to.
Young Brandon Linwy, who is a bartender over at Cafe 22 Tango.
Yep.
So that'll be fun. And we're still trying to get Rebecca on here, but Drew's dropping the ball.
We're
trying to get some real good-looking talent here.
Yeah. We'll see, though.
As the lights come on.
With a voice for radio.
Yes. At least. Face for radio, too. Just kidding.
Hey.
She's great. I think that's the podcast today. You got anything else?
Did we?
Oh, wait. That's not the podcast. We have a quick excerpt.
What else did we have?
Hasbro.
Oh, that's right.
Maker of the
Bop It.
Power Rangers, the Bop It. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think they own the rights to.
See, now they're going to release a Wu-Tang version of Bop It.
Transformers.
Bop it. Chuck it.
Transformers. All sorts of fun stuff. They just bought the company that owns Death Row Records.
Yeah.
Which means we're going to get Snoop Dogg action figures in no time. $4 billion, right?
And, quote from them, Hasbro has acquired gangster rap label Death Row Records, which counts Shakur and Snoop Dogg among its artists, as part of a bid to grow its stable of family-friendly entertainment.
Which is genius, because I grew up listening to it, and look how I turned out.
Yeah.
Boom. And, on that bombshell.
They also produce animated kids shows such as Peppa Pig and PJ Masks.
Oh my God, Peppa Pig and Snoop Dogg.
I want to see that crossover.
Hasbro, which owns the rights to My Little Pony, Monopoly, and Mr. Potato Head, said the company was looking to expand family brands.
Now, it's not, they didn't just buy Death Row Records. They bought a larger company that owns it.
Yeah, the acquisition of E1 adds beloved story-led global family brands that deliver strong operating returns to Hasbro's portfolio and provide a pipeline of brand new creation driven by family-oriented storytelling. Well, Death Row Records got a whole other kind of pipeline.
Yep. It was a cold, dark night. And on that bombshell,
yeah,
I think it's time we wrap it up.
Thanks for listening, guys.
It. Yep. We'll see you on episode 20.
The big one.
The big one. The big 2-0 post Bartender's Ball episode. Next Thursday, we'll record it, and it'll be up in no time.
I might still be drunk by then.
Yes, we will. And Drew will have a cocktail for you by then, too.
Yeah.
All right. That's it.
Bye.